And this week on Tab Talk, we are talking about the most prestigious home coffee makers in the game. We're talking about an Ohm fork whose dev doxed himself and then was later found to be using an AI-generated photo before rugging the entire project. We're talking about Oberlo, which is a super, super streamlined dropship marketplace that may have a place in the world of viral TikTok videos and additional income streams for digital assets. We're talking about the conversion rate on social followers to actual sales, whether it's a book or an info product, really, or anything, and how NFTs have obviously changed that dynamic entirely. We're talking about Award Hacker, where we use my desire to go to Santorini and never come back as a little case study to see what I can do with 180,000 credit card points. And then finally, we're talking about the 2022 Pantone Color of the Year Peri, which is a beautiful, luscious periwinkle purple. Let's get into it.
Tab Talk begins in 3, 2, 1.
Come on.
All right. Back again. Episode 12. You know, it's a historic day, SantaCon, sponsored by NanoFlips this year, both the New York and California editions. So, shout out all of our vest-wearing, TradFi, intrepid youth who foray once a year into the dark corners of Manhattan. What else happened this week? James went after Patek Philippe, which I respect. Got any words about that? Want to apologize
no, I went
to
after,
anyone?
Not even Patek's. I went after Richard Millier or whatever.
I was actually going to say the Patek Philippe is drip down. The Richard Millier is tough. Is rough. I'm not here for that. I just feel like with the Richard Millier, it's like the guy at the group dinner. Have you guys been in the scenario where you're at the group dinner and there's always a dude who wants to get the thing that has the gold flakes on it? You know what I mean? And it's like this cheesecake doesn't need gold flakes. Like this Wagyu doesn't need gold flakes. He's like, yeah, let me do it. It's like the Richard Millier guy,
Yeah,
or the aspiring Richard Millier guy. Like, everybody is having Richard Millier. Anyway.
I think those watches are made of plastic. I think those watches are actually just full on. You could just get a G-Shock. And I feel like G-Shocks are flexing these days.
G-Shock's coming back. Shout out to that. I remember my wife used to rep G-Shock back in the day. No, it's not. G-Shock. G-Shock. The top category on Depop under watches for Gen Z is G-Shock. We're breaking the trends here. If you aren't in touch with Gen Z, you can just check G-Shock TikTok and see where it's at.
I just went to the Richard Mille site and this is trash.
It's trash.
This is awful.
Dude, I think they're 300% over MSRP right now. I think they're 300K a pop. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure.
Bro, you can't.
It's a decision.
Today on You Can't Buy Taste. All right. Should we get into it?
Yeah, we can give us. Speaking of buying taste, I can hit this first pod or the first tab on the pod because it's just me really reflective of my tabs. I'll keep some links and some tools open that we've shared on here, but really it's just my search history, which is prestige coffee maker. Prestige espresso machine and best whatever. And so I have 20 tabs open right now because my wife basically K-cups have obviously been dead to us for a long time. Espresso has been dead to us forever. But we're trying to get it so that we can actually reduce the amount of time between when she wakes up in the morning and she inhales that mud. Right. So it's, for everyone's best interest. And we are looking at, what is this, what's the best automatic machine? What's the best, if we want to do espresso, do we want to do drip? Do we want to do cold brew? And so I have some of the links that we've been looking at in here because you get all these lists, right? It's wire cutters, top 10, coffee machines, and they've rated them and ranked them 45 times. Or I clicked the Architectural Digest ones because I'm trying to find whoever has some class that's putting some of this together and maybe it's them. And then we found a handful. I remember you guys were in the group chat and we were talking about cold brew machines and there's the Kyoto drips they sell on Amazon. And Kyoto drip is where it's the Japanese method of making cold brew where they the coffee sits for 12 hours and drips through a cloth. But you can buy these meth lab looking machines for $245.
Yeah. The meth lab approach is
it's definitely what you need to go for. And then the last one that I had in there was there's one called the Anza, which is a I was what's the chicest espresso machine we can buy. And it was this, it looks amazing. It's like a Brutalist espresso machine, but then, but it's not, it was like a Kickstarter that like hasn't shipped. And I was like, you know, what are we doing out here? So I just want to look, I'm putting it out there. We'll thread it this week. You give us your recommendations, but I need like that 10 out of 10 espresso or that 10 out of 10 cold brew that automatically is just going to be ready to go in the morning for me and my lady. So, you know, what do we got? And I can't be getting any of those moldy K-cups, you know what I mean?
No. Well, first of all, I'm big into K-cups, as you know.
Big but I will into say, K-cups. Big
K-cup guy here.
I'm a K-cup guy, not big into K-cups.
Yeah, we will just say Keurig sponsored James Camp because you can't sponsor this pod.
No one can sponsor this pod. Colin may be hating, but Colin, I've seen Colin at a K-cup. We've had K-cups.
If they double our current CPM, I'll apologize on pod. You know what I mean? And but it's high.
What I want to say is, I don't know if you guys remember, the listeners, the diehard fans, I think we had a brief touch about stoves at one point.
Oh, for you. Yeah, wolf range, let's go.
If your knobs ain't red, that's what I'm saying, if your knobs ain't red, are you even
they don't
doing
know,
it?
Bro. You can't get a convection bake.
This, bro,
you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. If you open this tab, first of all, shout out on the AD link, Oren. Good call on Architectural Digest. But the first one, I kind of want to get this Wolf coffee maker just because it's got the red knobs, which is like
filming
in the esoteric world of like home goods is the flex. You know what I mean? If you got red knobs on anything, I know you've made it. You know what I mean? That's sort of the energy I'm trying
this,
to bring
in. I mean, this right here highlights that we need a visual element to the pod because these things are like super cool. Like the Yama glass, which is the, you know, the meth lab cold brew scenario. Or that Anza that never actually made it off the ground on Kickstarter, which is a whole different conversation. Like, these things are sick. Have you guys tried Cometeer? Like the
I have tried Cometeer.
Is it good?
One of my homies is like, was an early investor in Cometeer.
Sick coffee
like
for founders, bro.
All to try. You know?
Yeah, no, I saw a tweet today that was like the Allbirds of coffee. Yeah,
it's so cringe, but I heard that the coffee's decent. So I can't
So I had one of my homies like sent us some to test because he's like was an early investor in it. And I got to say, I don't want to throw it under the bus, but I could not get the coffee out of the actual like cup that it's in. You know, like it's supposed to just like open it and turn it over. It's frozen. It was just frozenly stuck in the thing. So I'm not a huge fan, and I'm not a huge coffee snob. So in general, all I need is my coffee to taste decent and work.
Yeah, just needs to work is the.
And I just want to bring in for the listenership. If you are looking at, you know, say you were going to purchase that Richard Mille, you know, like where else should I put my money? To James' point, with the red knobs, connotates the Wolf Range, you know, which is a classic inspired. You know, gas range, but there's also the Ilve. There's also, I think it's Betrazzoni, like, which is, so just like the iconic red turn, you can get the, I think it's like brass and gold accents on the Ilve, and then the Betrazzoni is like orange. And, you know, if you really want to just, you know, be flexing that you are cooking that Ossobuco just right, you know, here we are.
I just want to let everybody know that I just watched Oren Google like trendy Wolf Range 2022.
Yeah,
like as he said.
This
that,
is so, yeah, well, yeah. We can't.
You know, it's even less flex is I was googling Wolf Range, and because I'm running this all on my MacBook, I'm a MacBook Air. My computer just froze because I got GarageBand going, Zoom, everything going.
Now you've actually seen me try the typing that was happening on this keyboard is me trying to contact someone at Anza to see if I can get a pre-production model. But that's it. Yeah.
Like, what's up? Let me get a prototype.
Like, hey, you guys in LA? Or anyway, so yeah, that was it. That's all my comments. It's just, you know, it's how we use the internet now. It's funny, like the listicle curation, you know, because I'm really what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for these top Google results. I'm looking for someone with my taste. Where's the app that's going to pair the recommendations, the listicles of what they have with someone that, that's what I like about Depop is once you follow people, they're like your size. You know, or like kind of have the same taste as you.
Your build.
Yeah, exactly. Then you like already, you already know versus like, I need that same thing for, I need wire cutter, but it's like, it's someone who's like, all right, like I want to buy something moderately more expensive than normal, but that's like very sick. Like, give me that.
I didn't realize Depop
was accessible premium niche.
What's popping?
Depop. I didn't realize Depop was still going on. I didn't realize that was still like a thing.
Yeah. It's like the Gen Z app, like Gen Z clothes. Like,
that's how you stay connected to the kids. I get it.
Sometimes you got to move a collection. Now, it's actually it's a form of marketing for a brand I used to advise who like has like the founders, like her collection of stuff is like a thing like that they market on Depop. And it's like part of how she interacts with their fans and stuff.
I respect the guerrilla marketing hustle deeply.
Do you like that? You know, if you go to the Tab Talk Depop and you could buy any of our fits, except, yeah, I don't know if there'd be any fits for y'all to sell. I don't know.
I'm wearing, I think, Levi's 511s, some Adidas socks, and an old Tom Snyder.
A 511 is a doable cut.
So, yeah, I'll put three or four things on Depop for the people, you know.
Hating, but I know Colin respects a 511. You know what I mean?
That's a slim taper, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit too big. It's a slim taper. Yeah. It's a little bit too big on the cuff. You gotta take the cuff.
Dude, that's
great. If you want things to be easy, then that's great. Yeah.
It is legitimately...
If you want to look like a warlock, then...
It is a slim fit. It's but the problem is the cuff is still a little bit too.
Yeah, it's not. Big. Yeah, it's not right.
But for $50, yeah. Baby.
But that's why. Yeah, that's why you gotta have it. You gotta have the tailor. I think we've hit this on previous pods too. But he's got the person locally. Just drop it off. And be like, yeah, just give it the classic. You know, I mean, take this up 2 inches. Take it in. Yeah.
Boom.
Zip, all right. Zip. What we got all next? Right.
Next tab is something that Oren threw in the group text. I think this weekend. I don't know. This weekend's been a blur. But so this is a tweet about the developer of an Ohm fork, an Olympus fork. So sorry, apologies. We're going into crypto land only momentarily, I think, for this pod. Yeah. But so the developer slash founder behind this fork, he I think he was being accused of putting together a rug here and pulling out a bunch of money, and then he doxed himself. He goes, "No, guys, I'm the real deal. Here I am. I'll do a passport video tonight, yada, yada, yada." So post the picture. And then he does, in fact, rug the entire project. And it comes out that the photo that he posted was an AI-generated dude and not even a real person in general. It is wild out here. It is absolutely wild out here.
Is there some sort of script now to reverse engineer if like a picture is an AI picture? Because all y'all fake startups should be fleshing out your leadership teams with these AI generated, just a multitude of generations, backgrounds, you know.
It is hard to wrap my head around the fact that I'm looking at this picture of a guy, but it is not actually a guy. Like that's it's weird.
You know, and they're really
very
good.
Simple.
There's
it's
like
basically
a
PFP.
Great.
Is there a PFP project to be done here with AI generated?
You know, I also wonder if like can they take someone and just, because you know what most people do online with filters, they just take themselves and make themselves like 15% more beautiful. Like why don't you just generate it? You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, we're just gonna take you and we're just gonna add that extra layer on. That's a service I'm selling in the metaverse. If you guys want to get on the bandwagon,
I'll
or
tell
not,
you,
a medicine.
I get frustrated because as a handsome man, and I'll call myself that, and I know I'm a man dime, but I'm not on a 10. I'm more like 8.
You're a beautiful man, James.
I'm a beautiful
don't count
man.
Yourself out,
that.
Brother. You're a strong 9.
I'm a strong 9. I'm an LA 8, but when you bring in my personality, I'm a 10.
We're all LA 8s, brother.
We're all LA 8s. But I think what's crazy is that, like, as someone who is probably more recently than either of you, probably you guys probably never been on dating apps. You've both been married for a hot minute.
No.
But, like, I'm on dating apps, right? And I can tell you that sometimes women will post these photos of themselves that are not even, like, you could do, it's real easy these days to have, like, a decent, like, you could smooth your skin, Facetune, Photoshop, right?
Right.
Like, it's not that hard to be decent, right? Decent with it. But some of these girls are just posting full-on Snapchat-filtered photos as all their photos. And I just don't understand, because this is me. Like, I woke up like this. This is me at my best. This is me at my worst.
But the level of self-conscious that there is out there, and then also just how acceptable it is now to be kind of look completely different online, is, I think, it has permeated the female culture a way different way than it's permeated the male culture.
The question, though,
but
is
also
it because
rather
of
like
toxic,
having,
toxic masculinity?
I haven't seen your Bumble profile or your Hinge profile, but let me tell you, we should probably get some better photos. I'm just going to throw that out there in advance, that we may need to go get some professional shots. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah, if it's not medium format, it doesn't belong on the profile.
Tell Marnie, Marnie to get ready, because we're about to do the whole shoot. We're about to.
Oh yeah, no, we're doing that next Sunday. We'll special guest her in, and we'll just look through the profile, and then that'll be behind the paywall. You know what I mean? Like,
I've done all right recently. There's some cool people I met.
Yo, honestly, we should just have like, you know, if we were talking about, you know, business ideas, we should just have our wives and then whoever James is sleeping with at the time workshop guys Bumble and Hinge portfolio, like, or their profiles, like as a service.
Don't bring your Tinder dates around my family, James.
Yo, but we need that perspective, because they're in the game. Like, we just have like judgmental wives,
sure,
right? And then he has someone who's like in real life, like, you know, day to day, like, you know what I mean. Yeah. It has to be someone that met James through an online platform. Anyway, I'm just telling you, this is paywall content. One ETH, get in the door.
One ETH,
you know,
is worthless now, bro.
Yeah. It's like an Australian dollar. You know, like
there's a girl I'm seeing, and she's actually super cool, but her profile literally had nothing on it. Nothing. It said her height, 5'6". That's it. And then pictures of her. And I was saying to her like today or yesterday, I was like, it's crazy, because you as a beautiful girl literally get to just say nothing at all. You just throw out some pictures out there, and no matter what, you open up your phone, you can go on dates like clockwork. Whereas me,
Meanwhile, you got to be breaking down philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you have to do about your views on
doing threads.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jameson. Well, Kent,
I remember when there was two girls who were like, "Oh, I know you from Twitter," and then one of them just like ghosted me.
Shorty, if you're listening,
she saw the tweets you were liking.
Yeah, if you did, like, I get it. You signed up for the NanoFlips newsletter. You were in the funnel. The funnel was hitting hard. You were thinking about it because, like, it was compelling. He talked about when he messed up on revamping a home. You know, he talked about his entrepreneurial journey, and you felt the experience. You felt the kingdom, you're just like, you know what? I can't do it.
Nameless, real quick shout out to Shorty that I'm hanging out with now, because everything that I find cringe about that, she's like, "That's super cool." And I was like, what? Like,
yo, that's a keeper. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's right, because it gets, that's how the homies are. Like, because we're like, yo, this is ill. Like, because I know it's converting. Yeah. I know it's like hitting the plug. Yeah. You know.
Anyway, so soon enough, the girls will go from Snapchat filters, just go straight AI is the answer. Full on, just fake it all the way. Why not?
I wonder what the dudes who are performing these AI rugs off of Ohm Forks are doing on the dating apps. Like, you know,
they're
like,
so rich, it doesn't matter.
It's hard out there, even when you got those ETH.
They're sitting on 100 million.
I don't know. I think it's after our Basel. I'm convinced that it's actually way harder for these guys than not, because like all the parties I went to that weren't like crypto parties was like very beautiful people. Like people obviously like hooking up. Like everyone has a lot of taste, and like the crypto stuff was like, oh my god, it's so many dudes and like women that are paid to be here, and it's like. And everyone's awkward. You know, like no one's talking in the same way, or like they're clustered and like the dude thing where they're all like yammering. It's not a casual exchange.
I heard similar things about some of these events at, in the cannabis industry, Hall of Flowers, right? It was this last week, right? In Palm Springs. And this girl was telling me she went to this Jungle Boys party, right? And they were like, yeah, 75 strippers, like Ferris wheel. She sent me a video exhibit performed. I was like, what is, shout out to Exhibit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, there's a split in the cannabis industry. Well, I guess there's like a three-way split. There's like corporate people that don't know what they're doing, that like to party and try to make cannabis look cool and don't make it look cool. They make it look whack. And then there is like the people who are really heady, like drug
The trappers, and
who are like into that and like really into, and they're just nerd guys who are really into weed, but they're also like, because it's weed, it's got that like danger element to it. And they're in this category of that party that you talked about, which is like, look, it's still a culture
danger element,
but it's like, yeah, but it's like, okay, cool. Like you were going to Spearmint Rhino when you went to Vegas anyway. It's like a different like look and feel, but like, yeah, but like you still respect it. Like it intersects. And then you have like the really like authentic, you know, like hip sort of like journey that's along that. That's this like smaller demographic, you know, that, because you do have like a lot of young women, a lot of young men, a lot of people that have kind of came out of that are kind of making like a living off of it. It's in this like weird tangential. But like the thing is, that middle group like doesn't have parties. It's either like the super corporate or the super cannabis.
And neither come together correctly for the events.
Yeah. And we're a little bit all three.
I was going to say. Like, and the two of you gentlemen.
Trappers.
orange, super corporate.
Happen to dance and all. You're the Venn diagram. When the Venn diagram comes together to make...
When the Venn diagram is also a circle, you know what I'm saying? Much like SantaCon fans and Jameson Camp followers on Twitter. Then,
you guys come in.
All right, what do we have next? We're moving on.
I think we have my tab. Oberlo. So Oberlo is, for all you, let's dive a little bit into marketing type stuff here. For all you guys who are interested in drop shipping, Oberlo is just like the super easy plug if you want to get into drop shipping, as if drop shipping wasn't an easy business model already. But the idea of dropshipping is, to catch everyone up, is you want to sell products, basically similar to affiliate commission, but they actually get fulfilled through somebody else, but you sort of get that sale through your site. And Oberlo is, it's like, it's just a straight plugin. And so instead of having to go through, you know, Colin does a lot of good threads that are sort of predicated on trying to figure out how to find suppliers and figure out how to get, you know, how to work with suppliers in China and do all that stuff. If you don't have the wherewithal to find yourself making phone calls to agents on Alibaba, then you just find yourself on Oberlo and you plug it in and they take a little piece of it as well.
Is anybody
doing a business based on this?
Yeah, I think like, these TikTok dropshipper guys are doing like, okay, all these little scammy like 5 to 30K month businesses. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Cause other, like, all the stuff on here has to be so commoditized. It is,
but there's a ton. Like, so there's like thousands of products on Oberlo. Like thousands of that. So what I'll tell you is, so I had a cannabis site and we had like millions and millions of visitors, and every once in a while we write about products like bongs, right? And so we just built another site called cheapsmokingaccessories.com, And every time we mention the word bong or papers or anything like that, we would just change the anchor text like to link to cheapsmokingaccessories.com, plug in Oberlo. And we weren't like running up crazy money, but we'd pull like an extra $300 or $400 a month, like just fully automated, right? So like it does all, like they order, it does the fulfillment, it forwards it to the everything. And everything. So I'm sure Oberlo takes more of a margin on you, right? But it makes it easier for those that are lost.
Well, it's funny how fleshed out this is, because I looked at this probably almost 3 years ago now. Yeah. With a friend of mine, because we were operating an Amazon store. We were working at an agency I used to run in the and we were working on a product. It was like massagers from China, like hand massagers, scalp massagers, back massagers. And we were just murdering it on Amazon with like the Amazon funnel. And but they wouldn't, like, when you work with some of these overseas companies, sometimes they just, like, at some point they'll just stop, like, just won't take your advice on stuff. And like they wouldn't change some of these listings like into like America speak, like, and just couldn't accept like the things you had to do this. And we're like performing heavy on there. So we got fed up and we're like, all right, let's just do something. We were looking at this.
Do my own massager brand.
You know, but it was only like, but they only had like, it was limited items, and it was like, they were all kind of trash. Whereas like now it's like all kinds of shit.
Well, what I'll say on Oberlo too, what I find interesting is that I actually haven't looked at this in a long time until today. But one thing you can see, they've really built out like this is like a whole indoctrination into, you know, like into dropshipping. It's not just like the plugin.
That world.
They're convincing you. They basically said, oh, our issue isn't, oh, let's get people to sign up for what products they're going to sell. It's, let's get them out to sign up to sell in the first place.
This is almost like some, you know, it'd be an interesting deep dive one to be, I don't know, like how much you guys know about Russell Brunson and like ClickFunnels. But
don't make
me pull all his books off the shelf, brother. Yeah. You know, man, like,
I literally,
but I'm saying like that's a good deep dive, right? But I'm just talking about like in terms of like, or you know, Alex Becker does it with Hyros. Kudos to him. I actually was so impressed with Alex Becker recently. He's just insanely crushing it. But like the indoctrination of like, I'm going to teach you how to sell, and then on the back end, really, there's just a SaaS. Like my real business model is the SaaS, right? Like that's Oberlo, right? They're like all these courses about how to dropship and shit, and then they just want you to use Oberlo. But if you can teach, and what's nice about it is like they're incentivized to make it work for you. Right? Because like they make more money the more you sell. So it's not like these incentives are aligned, which is I think rare sometimes in the info product world.
Yeah, which is funny. And you see, because it's like almost the opposite of the Substack approach, which is like, cool, write your newsletter. Then here's a couple extra tips and things to make the business run. They're getting more and more into it versus this is like from the start, like everything you need to do to kind of drop.
I wouldn't recommend Oberlo if you're looking to run paid. I think you're probably going to get your lunch eaten. But if you have like a weird, like let's say you have a newsletter, or we had a website that was not about like products, but we just realized that we were just like sending, that we just had the opportunity to, you know, I mean, it's just, if you want to pick up crumbs, I think Oberlo is like a great option for you.
I think crumbs on like an additional income stream for something you're already doing, or the TikTok, right? Because if you do a TikTok video about the massager, it gets millions of views. Like that's just a short term. It's all kind of like in the hustle realm.
Well, this all comes down to who's willing to take a little bit less margin, or who really has something that's that much better. Like if you go take, you say, hey, look, all the Amazon descriptions suck on this category. I can just do better descriptions. Like, okay, you've got some alpha. Or if you're just like, hey, I'm willing to make 8% on these transactions versus everyone else is making 14%, or I'm willing to pay more for the Google keyword. Like you can own almost any category out there from anybody. Like if you can either do something significantly better or be willing to take less than they will, especially in this world. But I did find it interesting. There's a link at the bottom to buy a pre-built Oberlo store, and takes you to Exchange Marketplace, of which there are just like a whole grip of them for sale, which is there's 31 Oberlo stores of in varying value. Like I just saw one for $8,500. Yeah. That one's $12,000, $200, that kind of thing. So these are already kind of set up businesses, which just ties back to, the business buying guide kind of deep dive we did prior, and just kind of how circular this world is. And if you want to learn more about digital assets, I'm on the newsletter for you, James
Campbell. Well, hold on. I'm trying to fill the funnel, brother. About phenomenal nanoflips.com what I was going to say is that this just really also reminds me of the probably one of the most common questions I get in my DMs or from people in real life is, you know, just like, oh, should I do this or should I do that? And like the answer is this all works. People are like, is dropshipping work? Like, sure, dropshipping works in the same way that, you know, like it all works. It's just like, can you make it work with your margins, and are you good enough at it, right? Like,
Hold on. I found there's an existing store on here, a private listing, 499474. Verified Shopify revenue, $16,802 a month. Average profit a month, $15,000. Inventory value, $100K in inventory. It's for sale for $250K, but it looks like they'll do like a $100K offer kind of thing. And this is they are all like a uniform military store specializing in work boots and apparel. like this is a business. This is a buy. Like they've done 1.3 million in revenue. You know, 273,000 visits.
Should the Dow buy this?
You know, like this is a you could 10 out of 10. I've looked at Alibaba. I've done like the axes. Like a bunch of these like man things for like projects that have come up. Like, yo, this is you could turn this into $1 million a year business in 6 months.
But the problem is that people aren't, most people looking at that are just like, is this going to work? I mean, like I said.
Yo, what's the list price? 250?
Yeah, it's 250. But I saw but when I pulled open, it had like 100. There was something around 250? I thought I saw 100, but no, it looks like it's 250. I confused it with the one above, which is a spine fixer brand.
I feel like online military surplus is like right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just going to pass it to some of the homies, but they just got money for something else.
How many gome is that?
This is like, it just needs a brand. How many gome? One gome is... 40.
What I want to give shout out to Ohm because I'm so confused. I'll never get out of that now. I took my staked Ohm, I wrapped it, made it gome. I don't know what I have anymore. It doesn't even show the value of my wallet.
And so to give people context, what we're talking about, if you've seen Colin's thread on Olympus DAO, which is one of the best Ponzi schemes out there right now, but they ushered in some, you know, they voted in the protocol or whatever it is, introduced their second version of their. Whatever it is, and then you have to go adjust a bunch of currencies and do a bunch of stuff that we're just barely following on to. But this is why crypto gets annoying. All right, cool. If I just invest in this and want to sit there for a year, it's like, no, you got to pay attention to the Discord. You got to watch like their major stock price, you know, went down because of a vote in the DAO that like not a ton of people contributed to. And it's just like, but now it's like, oh, with Geom, now we have voting rights in the DAO, and like
we're lost.
It's exhausting.
It's on now.
Crypto's too much. You know what I'm saying?
We're all quitting for this moment.
This is why we're buying a uniform in military store. But I'm just like, yeah, you know, 250K. I'm saying put 25K down. Put us on a note. You know what I'm saying?
Let's cook, bro. Yeah. All right, what do we got next? This is Orn's up. New York Times.
So popping into the dock. Ah, New York Times.
Got the paywall. What's the paywall side again? I want to see
It's 12 foot. I already tried it. Doesn't work. And so, sick.
Perfect.
But I did have my like 5 free articles for the month for the New York Times. Now that I'm back on the broke boy New York Times, standard.
Let me go incognito this. Continue.
So it says millions of followers for book sales. It's unreliable. So basically it's saying that authors have been getting advances and book deals off of their social media followings. And that kind of happened for a while, but it didn't basically at the beginning that it was, you know, it was all swell and gravy. And the first couple influencers that did their deals did really well. And now it's super unreliable. And I think this is kind of interesting to talk about because we've seen it like even, you know, like look on this podcast, on projects that you do, like there's some things you can get people to latch onto right away. And there's some things that people are just like, yeah, cool. I follow you on social media, but I'm not going to like support you but or like buy your shit or click your links. Like, and I think on Twitter, this is especially interesting. I think we have, there's two types of things happening in this like kind of money Twitter sphere that we're all tangential to. Like one is people are getting real value out of folks. Like they're following you for threads and tips and alpha, and that's amazing. But they also just truly don't give a shit about you. But then you have this other side of it where some of these people are developing huge affinity. Like I think whether it's Jack Butcher or even like, you know, like Blake Burgess, the guy or whatever, it's like any of these guys are kind of or who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of the CMO of Copy AI,
Amal or something.
Where it's like
Blake Amal. Yeah.
And so and like where's one of those like there are some of these people's followings will 1,000% like go buy that book. Like David Perel, like some of these where you're like, okay, now you're actually getting some of these micro folks where people dive all the way in. And it's like, what is the differential between just giving alpha and then that cult of personality? And then what does it take to execute on that? And as both of you guys who are in the middle of that hunt for elusive fame online, you know, what do you think is the separation point?
I think it's all context. And, you know, I say this as I'm trying to get through this fucking paywall so I can see the article. Pardon me?
Article doesn't matter.
I'm curious what her niche is and whatnot, but I think it's all context. That in when I say that, I mean both the topic that the person is talking about, the platform that they're popular on, that they have the following on, that they're promoting it on, and then finally the product that they're doing. And if those things don't line up, then it can be brutal. I think we see that, and a lot of people doing podcasts see that on Twitter, right? Twitter is a bad medium to promote a long form podcast. Like that, it is a thing. And so you don't see it there. But I think
is it a bad medium to promote a long form podcast, or are we just bad at it? question.
No, it's a notably bad medium.
I'm just talking shit.
Yeah, and I would like to say that I'm the foremost expert in us being bad at this podcast. But no, it's just all that context, and I don't think you can say that they don't convert. I think that if those three things don't align,
I mean, I can tell you for sure. What's interesting is that like it's like almost a trope at this point, right? But like every follower is not equally valued, and I think to Colin's point, it's all context. There are like. I wish I could find the example. People could Google around and find it. But there was some influencer, some woman with like 2 million, 3 million followers. And she launched a clothing line. I think she sold like 18 shirts or something, right? It was like something abysmal.
Yeah.
And then there's people, I know people who don't really have an info product necessarily or a direct product, but they run agencies. And they got like 2,000-3,000 followers on Twitter. And they're pulling for real 7 figures off their agency. And all their deal flow is coming through Twitter. Right. So it's what's your back end?
And a lot of that.
What's your back end? What's your product? Okay. And then also like how aligned is your audience? Right. It's just like if you are like I had one of my best friends used to date this girl, Natalie Suarez. Her Instagram is Natalie Off Duty. And so she gets these like the brand partnership she gets are like Chanel, Gucci, right? But like she's really like her stuff is all about fashion. She's a beautiful girl, but it's not her followers are not dudes beating off to her, right? Like it's not like half these LA influencer chicks who just have, let's be real, right? Like Hey mom.
Yeah, no, it's 50 retweets, it's 40, you know, it's 400 likes, it's 400 bookmarks, and 400 reshares. You know what I'm saying?
There's no correlation unless you. And this is why I think what's interesting is it's really valuable to if you're audience building to really make sure that you're like a message aligns with whatever product you're selling. If you're looking to sell a product, right? Because it does become a vanity metric, right? 3 million followers, you know, in the wrong audience. We'll sell nothing, right? Like you got 3 million followers that follow you because you look good in a bikini. Have fun selling an info product on, you know, on digital strategy.
Yeah, or have fun
even
selling
better.
Bikinis
yeah, have fun selling bikinis to 98% 70-year-old male following you.
I think the case study on this context lining up is really NFTs is a great example of it. Right, you have so many artists who've been doing their art in some way, shape, or form for years and years and years leading up to NFTs and maybe making a living, maybe doing well, but now all of a sudden seeing like massive wealth because of it. And it's not that the art has particularly changed. It is that the product and their ability to deliver it in a way that like works for the audience has changed.
Well, I think really it does come down to like, I guess there's some people who the audience will just snap it up no matter what, but for everyone in that middle bracket, it really does come down to the products. Like the NFT reference, I think, is a really good one because I remember we worked with this guy, Ruben Wu, at when Colin and I worked in drones at 3DR. Exactly. He made some amazing imagery for us and captured some things for a launch video. And I always followed his work, and it was that kind of work where it's like he trudges out in the middle of the night to like remote locations in Iceland to shoot in the freezing cold with like to get these amazing like immersive landscapes. And you're always like, okay, he's getting his due. He's got wired profiles. He's got these like really, you know, he obviously has some good kind of corporate gigs. You know, he's selling prints, but then like NFTs changed everything because, and you already knew because you're like, okay, so people are going to appreciate the craft of this. And the people that follow them are going to be, are like on the edge of like the tech portion of it. Like they're going to be ready for this. I think the product's a lot to play with it. Because I remember even the influencer thing you brought up with a girl only sold like 18 shirts. Like my wife followed a number of kind of influencers. And I remember there was one of them that like she doesn't have any feeling for them one way or the other. Like she follows these kind of people randomly, but just doesn't care. Doesn't know their drama, any of that. But she, this one woman, something Navy, she like hunted down her clothing line. She like hunted like Nordstrom, like day of launch. And I was like, really? Like, is this something that you like have? And she's like, no, like I actually just really like the clothes. And like, it's rare something comes across my timeline I like and I got into, but then you kind of watched her brand affinity. Once she bought one thing from her, she was like, okay, like now I'm in. Now I want them like looking at every drop. But then there's all these other people to the point of the other influencers where it's like, hey, yeah, the stuff wasn't right. You know, and so I think that where it is, like if you just bust something off quick versus like really making sure that product is
something
perfect,
Navy is a perfect example
difference.
Of that girl. Is that Ariel Charnas? It might be. The point is, she like has, yeah, I mean, I her so. Followers are women that like her style, right? And like follow her for style tips, right? As opposed to like, again, to a bunch of 17-year-old boys that are just, you know, double tapping the like. I know the three of us had a conversation recently. I think this guy, Justin, I think his last name is Welsh or Walsh or something, Justin Welsh. We were all blown away that this guy was doing 50K a month through LinkedIn, right? And so his his product is has to do with like building an audience on LinkedIn, which is like the perfect sort of, if you can build an audience on LinkedIn and make that, you know, it's
no one in the real world even LinkedIn. Has to know.
Yeah. But hold on, yeah. so he and I, he.
Yeah. It's funny who does use LinkedIn, because it's all the people that aren't on the other social media who I don't have to worry about like looking at my tweets yeah, and being like, oh my, this isn't corporate, right? They're all LinkedIn. Being like, man, you're posting a lot there, son.
Well spoken. So, but
what's interesting about Justin is like, Justin's the CRO of this company called Patient Pop. And I dabbled for a little while in consulting with a telemedicine company. And we were looking at Patient Pop funnels all the time. So interestingly enough, like I know Justin, he left Patient Pop to go all in from our conversation, to go all in on infoproduct stuff. And he was like the CRO of a very large venture-backed telemedicine company. I'm sure he had a whole block of RSUs, but like, you know, of options or something, you know what I mean, or stock early on. And they're growing, they're crushing. Telemedicine is probably top three sexiest space in a post-COVID world. And he was like, forget that. I guess, you know, like I'm going in, because he realized how to make real value out of the audience that he'd built off it. And so I don't think he's got millions of LinkedIn followers, right? It's just, you, if you got the right product for the right audience, you don't need millions of followers to be pulling. I mean, we all looked at the screenshots, $50,000 a month, that's $600,000 a year yeah. from your laptop. That's
what? And you can see ever since we shared this, I started posting on LinkedIn a lot, and I posted like 4 out of 5 days this week, and it's dark out there. First of all, just even logging into LinkedIn every day is dark. But the the engagement's crazy.
Godspeed.
Sharing's there. I try like a whole bunch of different stuff. Like even the bad post I had still had like 11 touches, and of those, yeah. like 8 are decision makers. You know, like, and so it's like, yeah, there really is the funnel there. And with like a flatter algorithm, it's just dark. But it ties to what we've talked about before, and the thing I have the biggest problem with personally, which is like success yeah. happens at peak cringe. And if you want to go like lock down the bread, like LinkedIn is the epitome of peak cringe. You can go get money there yeah. right now. But then I see these people getting clowned, like LinkedIn people getting clowned on Twitter all the time, where it's like, you know, like they're really like get taken to town, like inside these comments.
With that
like,
said,
are you ready for that?
You know?
You're talking to a couple guys who put their heart on, yeah. on their sleeve on Twitter. So yes, we're both ready
yeah,
for it.
Yeah, but you don't put your heart on your sleeve with
Pete
cringe.
Close.
Like James is like yeah. has like a 20% cringe ratio.
I don't know.
He's getting close because he does it really right. And Colin, you know, you're like barely touch cringe. You know what I'm saying? Like
it's yeah, well, it's super cringy, it's so for, cringy me. For me. I mean, Oren said okay. last time the three of us were together, Oren was like, Oren said, he's like, well, Colin's really just who Colin is on Twitter. James is, he's like, you're exactly who you are, but a little bit more of an extreme version of like, I really am me, just a little.
Yeah, but just a little bit more toxically masculine, just a little bit yeah, more right wing.
Just clicking a few,
yeah, he's
clicking
like
on a few tweets you didn't see coming.
Yeah, he's unvaccinated, James, on Twitter. Yeah. He's vaccinated yeah, like yeah. unvaccinated on Twitter.
You gotta
pander
to the audience. You gotta pander to the audience.
You speak of that, I have gotten a toxic masculine Twitter now that seeps into my feed from the things James Camp likes, or it's either from you or it's from Shaw's likes. There's only one of the two the options that have that slithers across the timeline, but it has gotten me back on like yo, we cooked big meats this weekend. You know what I mean? Like we were like, you know, we can't just be, you know, eating casual food. We should be, you know, we're cooking sous vide, lamb loin, chops. We're cooking, you know, like duck bacon, one or the other. I was ready.
A5 Wagyu on Saturday night. I could say that's
yeah, and I would not be doing that without toxic masculinity Twitter.
You know, only toxic masculinity Twitter would make me feel like it was a flex to throw just like some raw steak on the timeline.
Yo, I don't know. Yeah, you were literally were just dude, like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna post a picture of this like steak in the package from the grocery
like
store on Twitter.
Like,
I was like, sick. I get that shit in the pan, brother.
Yeah, you don't have some color you can put next to it.
Yeah, I can't get that on the Wolf Range. I know you just got the Wolf
funny?
Range
some
in the crib.
Some of those comments,
like,
I'm not
show
even
off the red knob.
I mean, that was like, I and shout out to my boy Lucas who actually paid for the steak because I didn't pay for it. But those are $120 a pop
dude.
Each.
God,
but he
keep up the facade.
I
brother.
Posted that and people were like full on. That's the one you take. You scan the barcode. It shows you the cow like type from the farmer's market. Like really nice A5. But point is, people were commenting like on it like.
Damn.
Some people in their life, most 99% of people in their lifetime will never get to taste.
never have steak like this. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? Sprinkle
some gold on it, brother. Get the gold flake, baby. Get the gold flake. But yeah, that's the energy of it. But I don't even know how we got to that.
Oh, shit. All right, there we go. What we got next?
It's awardhacker.com. And awardhacker.com is like a super, super simple website. But this is also worth a deep dive at one point. Which is the the credit card points game, which I can tell you that I think for not enough money, if you don't have a lot of points and you make a lot of money, then you're just wasting your energy trying to figure out how to hack points. But if you take a tiny bit of time preemptively, or you work in a industry where you can spend a lot on a corporate card, then there's a ton of opportunity to fly around the world and mega flex first and business class everywhere without spending a dollar of your own money. And if you use awardhacker.com, you just type in the destination you want to go. You tag the different award programs that you have points in, and it will tell you the cheapest, or sorry, most affordable way to fly around.
All right, here we go. Live usage. So Portland to Santorini, round trip, business class. I've got 186,000 Amex points. Boom, I'm going. 88,000
a ticket. Two of you round trip business class to Santorini from Portland. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so 170,000.
And I can
points,
tell you with
two of us.
Hold on, let me say with the Amex Gold. I can tell you if you spend ad spend, tell Kels right now, get the Amex Gold up to I think $400,000 a year. You get 4x points for every dollar you spend on ad spend with an Amex Gold. So you can get another like 1.6 million. Yeah, and.
Yeah, and you know, and I was gonna say, so which card?
Warren, you're on the Amex Gold. Can we use my card for the military surplus?
Yeah, I know. We're using mine, brother. I'm on the same card plan. But that, and you know, there's also the there's a separate lender just for points. It's basically it's like a cash back deal. Beautiful. Just for ad spend. I've swapped all ad spends to this like other service. But yeah, so you have the Amex Gold. I'm Amex Gold. But we have a second car. We used the Amazon.
Dude, I was at dinner the other night. I was like, I got to cop that.
2% back.
Yeah, I was like, I got to get that Prime card because I literally shop off Prime like it's my job.
Yeah.
But yeah, Amex Gold. And actually, you'd think Platinum is better, but depending on what you're spending for ad spend online, the Gold is the points.
Now, and Gold is solid, and you get the free TSA free. Like, there's a whole bunch of, like, you still get the concierge. Yeah, if you have an Amex, you're not using the Amex concierge. Like you really should. They're very, very good.
Yo, just so we're all on the same page, like a business class ticket to Santorini, that's got to be.
I think more, bro.
$5,000-$7,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was. I mean,
it depends on the plane.
Some flights.
Shit, yeah.
I mean, some flights, dude. I mean, when I was living in Asia, I would fly back and forth first and business class a lot. And all on points. I think some statistic that like 70% of all first and business class flights are booked in points. But I remember looking at one of the
and 100% of your
points. Yeah, like, honestly, I can go to Santorini from LA for $400
business class.
Now.
What?
Okay. And then business all class. Right. Business class looks like 1731.
No,
right,
no.
James, get this tab the fuck.
I mean,
out
right
of
here.
Here.
Here's LAX.
I think flights are just cheap right now.
There's a million different details about it. And then there's also points about transferring your Amex points to different airlines will give you bonuses on points. It's just it is the move. I remember looking at flights that I was flying first class to Malaysia that were going to be $21,000 in cash to go from New York City to Malaysia first class on the wrong flight. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like that you just use and it would 100,000 points. The other thing I want to say is like real note about the Amex stuff is if you spend enough, I mean, they don't advertise it, but you can get an Amex rep. I have one and they will just open. There is no limit to how many cards you can open on one corporate account or one person's name. So you are welcome to people. There are plenty of people that will just rotate because it happens to be each month you get capped out on how many points you're allowed to get off the spend. And they will just rotate through five cards every month. So they're just racking up points. And to be honest with you, this is a much deeper conversation about margins, right? But you know, you don't have to be running, you could be easily spending $5,000 a day and have a business that made you, you know, $300,000 a year, even a nice business for yourself, self-employed, but be spending, you know, $1.5 million a year on ad spend and racking up an extra, you know, 3, 4, 5 million points. You know, that's the real magic about it. So anyway, Award Hacker, obviously dig through it. Some of them can be better than others, but I can promise you this is the that there's a ton of opportunity. I mean, even right here, LAX to New York, if I fly business, it's telling me it's going to cost me 45,000 points on Amex. 45,000 points if I'm getting 4 points per dollar on ad spend. That means I got to spend $10,000. Like, I you know what I mean? That's $300 a day. That's totally reasonable spend for an online business.
Now you've got me looking. I'm looking here. I got LAX to Santorini, $3,500 business. You know, now I'm starting to get real intrigued.
Is this about, where we host the first in person pod? Yeah. is in Santorini?
Well, and this is what I want to bring up for. It's another thing too. I've been thinking a lot about. We've moved around a lot in our lives. Like every 6 years, essentially, we've moved, and they've always been like transformative experiences. Like. Your network completely changes. Your experiences completely change. Your world context changes. Like every time you do like a big move. And a lot of the fact, like I have all these businesses and investments and things scattered around over the years. And it's like two from here, two from here, two from here. And it's like, a lot of them are just kind of from these places and things and like networks. And so I highly recommend moving around in your life. I guess that's point A, but point B is a lot of people have that angst around, oh my God, like I have to do this hard thing. I have to uproot and go somewhere else. And a lot of it's around like, okay, I'm going to fly across country. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Like you can do all that shit on points. You know what I mean? Like you can do like the transportation of your stuff. You can do the actual flight and all that. And with deals like this, like it becomes a lot easier. And I'm using that to say like, there's no excuse not to like, to ever spend like more than a decade somewhere. Like, I mean, you gotta take advantage of the world.
I just moved to LA 2 months ago. My thought is, I was just in Cape Cod. I'm going to Florida. For Christmas, come back, going to Mexico, come back, going to New York, then Mexico again. I think only one of those flights is paid cash, right? I mean, it's just, anyway, Oren's right. I think that to sum it up in a really beautiful thing I think about a lot is we are the first generation in the history of all time that it is possible for us to host a podcast in three different places or to hop on a plane and just go to the other side of the planet in a moment's notice. Like I'm at like 50 years ago, even 50 years ago, it would have been like, all right, like I guess I'll call you. Or 100 years ago, you'd hop on a ship and hope you lived.
And it's so easy to set up shop. Like think about setting up shop in a new place where it's like, I can research everything online. I can meet people before I get there. I can get the job before I get there. I can do this whole kind of transition on points. You know, like it's a, like the opportunities to like change your life are relatively radical.
All right, well, now everyone should go to be a digital nomad at some point in their lives. All right, what we got? What we got next? Colin, this is you.
All right. Yep. So a lot of different links we could use here, but this is the Pantone color of the year for 2022. And so the color is called Perry. It's a periwinkle purple. And
great color. I thought this was
hilarious. It is beautiful. I'm going to give you guys some backstory here for why I think this is hilarious. I totaled my car, I think it was about 10 years ago. And so I was between cars and my dad was like, if you just want to drive your grandma and grandpa's Camry until you figure out what you're doing next, by all means. And so this Camry was a periwinkle purple Toyota Camry that my, at the time, 96-year-old grandpa is like definitely backed into a few things. So I spent like 5 or 6 months driving this car that we nicknamed Perry that was the exact color of the Pantone color of the year. And so this set off an alarm for me. I love it. It's a beautiful color. And the question I have for you guys is, awkward first cars or
I was going to say, as wild, a car dude, what wild as a cars car man, I'm surprised, a little as, bit of time I'm surprised driving. You rocked the periwinkle Camry.
It was dark days. I was definitely broke, despite what money Twitter will tell you that can happen.
Why didn't you start an agency? Why didn't you just start an agency? That's
simple, I was doing an agency at the time. Wrong kind. I actually totaled my car because there was like flash flood raining, insane raining in Portland. And I'm driving like under an overpass through a bridge and it had gotten clogged. And I'm going into it, and there's like 8 inches of water. And I was driving this slammed Audi that I used to drive, and it just sucked a ton of water into the intake and totaled it on the spot. Like it just went in, and that was the end of that car. And then I got
Audi. I want to shout out that Oren did hate on Audis on the timeline recently. You know what I'm saying? Oren did say.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, Audis are the Richard Mille of. It's like everyone's like, oh, I think this is cool because it's foreign, and like not as many people have heard of it, and like
it depends.
It's like
a little bit. I used to rock an A4.
It's tough out there.
Oren has like a classic like wash rich guy perspective on this versus like a versus from a car perspective.
Nah, it's just an NSX is plain.
You know what I'm saying? Of like mileage automobiles.
No, totally. If you're a wash rich guy.
you know?
If you're a Wash Rich guy and you're like, I need to have like a sure. rich guy car, then yes, I would agree.
Oh, not at all. But, just that range. It's like, I'd rather have the Genesis. Like, hand over to have like all day. Like, none of those.
Again,
their electric vehicle doesn't look good. Their prestige vehicle is not a chunk of the prestige of the Mercedes one. The SUVs, like, were cool for a hot minute and then, like, are now just a wash car. It doesn't, it's just not a look. I don't know. It's just,
yeah, so if you're a washed rich guy, looking for, what is a car that makes me look like a rich guy? I agree.
I was a good car because like it doesn't enter into that range.
No. German cars are awful. I used to be a Volkswagen Audi guy. So I used to be a car guy. In that era, I had three Volkswagen and Audis, and I loved them. They're awful cars. German cars are awful cars.
I was
sorry,
just,
James.
You know, I was whipping an A4 before this. So I literally before this car had an A4. I know.
And
yeah.
And you know. So you know, I mean, my wife has an Audi. I like it a lot. It's beautiful. I wouldn't recommend it. She's had good luck with this one, but weird, silly things happen.
To give you real quick context, and then I will tell you my first car story because I think it's a good one. My car, the day I drove it off the lot, a sensor popped up. There's a triangle with an exclamation point in it right now. I just took it to the dealership. Yeah. It just says there's a headlight malfunction.
Yeah.
And I know there's not because it works.
German.
Yeah. And I used to have a BMW.
Yeah,
and
German.
The sensors always used to go off.
German.
Wrong. So I made an appointment with the BMW service center. I go in 2 days ago, bring the car in, pull up. The woman was like, all right, you want to hand me the keys? And I was like, well, no, I just need you to reset the sensor. I know how it works. I've had this before. She's like, well, there's 87 cars in front of you. We're really bad. I was like, excuse me? She was like, well, I don't know how long it's going to take.
Pretty,
it may take a few days. And I was like, well, you guys give me a loaner? She's like, oh, well, the loaners aren't available till January. I was like, well, what do you want me to do? She's like, I guess I can call the office and see if they'll give you a rental. And I was like, well, how long will that take? Like, I live in LA. Like, I'm not in New York City. I can't hop on the subway. Like, how do I get out of here? So I've now made an appointment on January 3rd. I am bringing my car back in. So they can fix a headlight sensor, and that's when the first loaner they can give me is. But
yeah, and this is what number you just now. You just need to go to like BMW or San Bernardino. Like that's like the whole. That's what everyone does. They just go out to the. They go out to the desert and go to.
Well,
the
so other, to come to follow to it up is my first car I ever owned was I bought a Ford E350 16 passenger van, church van as everyone may know it. And I used to in a different life I was a nightclub promoter and I worked out east in the Hamptons on the weekends. And I had to figure out how to get
just trucking
10 plus
them in.
Girls every Literally. Week into the Hamptons. So for $5,800 bucks, I bought a van on Craigslist.
That's
definitely,
not, yo,
dude.
They
would
got
be,
in it.
And I hope the statute of limitations is up on this because I only had a learner's permit at the time. I didn't have a driver's license. And there was a kid I knew in the Bronx whose dad owned a dealership. And I would just go up to the Bronx once a month and for $50 he would give me temporary tags. He would print me new temporary tags from the dealership, and I would laminate them and screw them into the back of this 16-passenger van. And I would drive out east, you know, with a bunch of just derelicts, you know, having a good time at 4 o'clock in the morning after I worked in a nightclub on Friday nights. And that was my first car I ever owned. So, yeah, that was it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. What was your first car?
Oh, man, mine are dark. I had a 93 Cadillac DeVille. I didn't own a car until I was 21, and I bought that off a lot for $2,000. And like, I worked at like a full service gas station and like an auto shop before, and I have like very basic. I was like, yeah, you know. And so I was fighting the good fight in that shit every day. Eventually, the transmission like fell out while I was driving, like level of you know bad. And then I replaced it with a '90s ACK Legend, like a '92 ACK Legend on like the BVS rims. So yeah, I was really doing the most of like the okay, what can I get for $2,000 to $6,000? That is just gonna fall apart completely. Yeah, and that lasted for like for a year, and then we got the Benzo.
So my actual first car was not the Periwinkle Toyota Camry, but. In the vein of the Volkswagen Audi, so it was a orange
What's a double slug bug? Hold on,
let's go.
And
I'm looking it up. I'm using the
bro.
Oh, get
it's
a bro.
A VW
that is,
bus.
So Colin just told this story because he wanted to flex that he had some orange swagged out of his VW bus. You knew Oren and I were gonna have some crappy stories. Oren's was kind of cool. Mine was as whack as it could be. It was. Yeah, it's true.
No, you're on the hustle though.
So there is no first car that your parents could give you to set the stage for you being a stoner in high school more than that double slug.
Your parents knew that. That's a problem. Yeah. I was thinking about that Cadillac. It had the straight across seats.
Oh, on the front, you mean?
So fire.
The bench.
Yeah, the no buckets. Yeah, just like, and so it's like, you know, Shorty can sit right next to you. Yeah, I mean, you put the bag right there. No, like, everything's just...
No console.
It was perfect. They need to bring that back. I guess it's like a massive safety issue, but like...
I had my van... God, this is so bad. I had my mom registered in her name because I didn't have a license, and I thought you couldn't own a car unless you had a license, which is not true. But anyway, my homie, I like kind of sold it to a friend. Shout out, Mom. She listens to all of these.
Shout out, Moms.
Yeah. She's going to remember... She'll never forget this. Yeah. I promise you that. I'd like kind of had a friend who I like kind of sold it to. Anyway, he left it in a parking lot in like East Hampton for like 3 years. And the sheriff came to take it. And when they towed it, there was like tens of thousands of dollars of tickets on this car. And my mom was still the owner because I was just, yeah.
Because you only kind of sold it.
And she was like, what happened? Why more is it? Of a collab. What's going on with this van? And I was like, I don't know. Don't pay it. She got out of it, but it was like a nightmare. This was like when I was just not a responsible human. So anyway, shout out to that van. It was
shout out to Moms. We're sorry.
I actually hit
for everything James has done. Yeah, we're trying. We're working with him.
That car, that was so scary. Actually, scary times. Luckily, it's.
Thanks for listening to Tab Talk.
That's that alpha that the guys are looking for. You know, when they tune in,
the trick is you want to be 4 feet off the ground if you hit a deer.
Be like, man, remember when I hit that deer?
That's the only way you're safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I keep a can. It's why you got to keep Narcan on hand for trying to bring the deer back.
Oh, man. Sag Harbor lost a deer that day.
Sac Harbor, shout out to Squad, Montauk, East Hampton. Y'all know what it is. Long Island, stand up.
This is a weird episode, but we're tabbed out.
That's it. We're tabbed out. No, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, what do we want to do? We want to do, James explains.
Throw it at
explains,
me. Throw it at me. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I mean, what are we doing? James explains medium format.
That's easy, dude. So medium format is actually a style of cooking steak. Because that's for those people that are looking for medium format is the range of medium rare to medium well. And so if you go into a restaurant and they say, how do you want your steak cooked? You say chef's choice medium format though. And what that means is that you're looking for it to be in the range of medium. You know, it's like a bracket. Because you want it to be, you know what I mean, dealer's choice. Like however the chef would prepare it, but medium format only. That's what medium format is.
Perfect.
What are other segments we used to have? We used to have the Money Twitter Cancel Hunger
floor
Games.
Check.
Is there anyone that needs to go?
Floor check.
We all got
floor
rugged.
Check's done.
Everything's a rug.
Floor check's done. Everything's a rug.
Sorry, you got rugged. It's all fake.
It's all floor check.
Yeah.
We got, I like free game. I don't have any this week.
But if everyone's, if anyone who's in downtown Los Angeles on December 18th on Saturday.
Oh yeah. Okay, we're gonna. We're throwing a party on Saturday. Tap Talk, and a combination of cannabis brands from around the U.S. are throwing a party at 1149 South Los Angeles Street. Come holler at the gods. We'll be in VIP, so you probably won't be able to get to us. But you could, if you want to send some voice notes on the anchor page. We'll listen to something midway through, and then be like,
NFTs. We're all got rugged. There's no free game this week.
Yeah, no yield farm of the hour. Every yield farm
gum
is a rug.
We're hoping gum.
You know, there are. There's nothing left standing. Yeah, we're at half of where we're.
I think I bought some more, like 1,200 bucks. I did not do well with that, but I will say, I did send you guys a really interesting article. That'll be another tab. The CoinDesk one, I loved it. The title was Ohm, either the Olympus DAO, either the future of money or a Ponzi. I think that's what the.
Yo, I was describing it to a neighbor.
Or both.
Yeah. I was describing it to a neighbor last night, and he was like, but that's just like, how could that be? I'm like, well, it's a Ponzi scheme. So like, it can be anything that you want it to be. I was like, you kind of understand this going in.
Recently,
you know,
and I know, like Senate hearing stuff, right, about crypto. And then I saw some of the tweets were just like, this is so bullish for crypto. The best part is, I think it was one of some big crypto influencers. He goes, the best part is they didn't even mention a single Ponzi. They're not even onto our Ponzi's yet. Like that.
Oh yeah, they haven't hit bro. They don't know anything about L2. The IRS don't know about L2, brother.
Mongoose coin. Even, if you wrote the mongoose in here right coin wave,
you wrote the mongoose wave. Yeah, that was good. That's in tweets. I know we're gonna get me in trouble. It was me co-opting the crypto mongoose tweet. Huh? Anyway,
Stay Rich Money Twitter.
All right,